Welcome back to Current State for Wednesday. We're glad you can join us. As you may know, Lake Wobegon comes to East Lansing this weekend as a Prairie Home Companion host. Garrison Keillor brings his radio romance tour to the Wharton Center this weekend. Later this hour, our Melissa Benmark speaks with the muse of a Prairie Home Companion, the great Garrison Keillor. That's coming up. Also, Neighbors in Action on the way here for a Wednesday, the last day of July, and that means it's time for our Month in Review segment, when Current State focuses on July's biggest Michigan news stories, the Detroit bankruptcy, Medicaid expansion, and others. Let's welcome this month's contributors. Tim Skubick is the host of WKAR-TV's Off the Record. Welcome back, Tim.
Thanks for having me here, Marky.
Sure, and we're happy to welcome for the first time to Current State Kathy Gray, who covers the Capitol for the Detroit Free Press. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Mark.
And David Eggert does the same for the Associated Press.
Hi,
welcome,
Mark.
Dave. It's good to put the faces with the bylines here this morning. The state Senate's first Medicaid hearing was yesterday. This is part of a much anticipated process as it relates to the Affordable Care Act and universal health insurance coverage. And Republican Majority Leader Randy Richardville famously predicted in a vote here in the next 30 days. Here is the Senate Majority Leader yesterday. He says the members of his caucus have been mostly positive about the revised plan.
Whether you agree or don't agree, philosophically or otherwise, I think there's a general consensus that this is an improvement over what we were asked to push through in late June.
Kathleen, you spent a lot of time at the hearing yesterday, and you write about it in today's Detroit Free Press. What happened yesterday?
Well, the Senate hasn't seen the bill yet. This is the first committee hearing that they've had on it. And so they had, it was mostly supportive comments from a lot of business type community, from the business type community. And then there were some opponents who were pretty passionate about their disapproval of the plan.
And supporters of the alternative Senate plan get to make their case later today, correct?
The supporters made their case yesterday. And the opponents, Senators Pat Colbeck and Bruce Caswell, are going to be introducing their alternatives today.
And what kind of horse trading is going on here?
The Senate has beefed up some of the language in the bill that makes sure that if the feds stop their contributions to the plan, that the state isn't on the hook for it. They've also put some more language in it that encourages healthy behavior, incentives for healthy behavior, and consequences for people who aren't contributing to the co-pays and things like that.
And Tim Skubick, what kind of case are Colbeck and Caswell going to make today?
It's almost irrelevant, okay? They're going to given their chance in court. Colbeck has a, quote, free market system, which is not going to get enough votes. He's basically representing the Tea Party. Bruce Caswell is a very responsible lawmaker, has a different idea. Randy Richardville wants to be fair to everybody, give them their time to make the point. But I think if this is not a grease to be passed, next month, it's pretty darn close.
And can we assume that if the less strict measure is approved, that Senators Caswell and Colbeck are not on board when it comes up for a vote in the larger Senate?
I think that's a fair assumption. I think Richardville will probably put up 7 or at the most 8 votes, and we might have a 19-19 vote with Lieutenant Governor Kelly breaking
that.
Wow.
Okay. What do you think, Kathy?
I think that's pretty close. I think that there might be a few more Republicans, but not many. I don't think Richardville is going to get a majority of the majority, is what they're talking about, which would be 13 of the Republicans in the Senate. And I don't think he's going to get that.
Dave Eggert, can you remind our listeners what the House has already passed? Because this is largely what's in front of the Senate here.
Yeah, the Senate plan has a lot of the guts of the House plan with a few more changes. Basically, the way this plan works is the state will have to go to the federal government and get approval for it. And it has cost-sharing requirements, so people that would be eligible for Medicaid would pay, 5 to 7% of the cost out of pocket, which has raised some concerns from advocates as to whether they can afford that. I think there is some language that would allow the state to maybe give those people a waiver, you know, if they couldn't afford it. That's the big, I guess the biggest thing with the federal government is this 48-month after people are on for 4 years, the cost-sharing requirements would go up for recipients. And, you know, that's kind of the, I guess you would call the key provision in the bill.
Is the serious arm twisting over here, Tim, as you see it?
Well, I think the backstory on this is that let's go back to last June and the governor's infamous quote, take a vote, not a vacation, when all looked lost. And lo and behold, here we sit on this ugly, pure Michigan morning where the sun is still not shining. And this thing is close to being done, which is a testimony to the process. Randy Richardville, I think, had this right all along, and had the governor listened to Mr. Richardville, there would have not have been the kerfuffle that unfolded that I think damaged his reputation with Senate Republicans to a large extent. That didn't have to happen. Basically, the Senate said, let us look at this, let us work on this, let us put our stamp on it, which is what lawmakers do, and at the end of the day, they're going to pass something. Mm-hmm. And so what happened last June for us, which was a great story, the governor actually getting angry? Who would have thunk? Okay, but he went through a lot of machinations that didn't have to be done to get where he wanted to go. Lesson learned, perhaps.
I'm really curious here, just as a matter of process, when legislation reaches this phase, when the focus is on the Senate, do House leaders like Speaker Bolger, are they still playing a role? Are they talking to senators here?
Sure. They have to, because the plan that the Senate is going to pass has to go back to the House for concurrence.
Okay.
So they've got to be talking to Representative Shirky, who is one of the main sponsors of the bill in the House, and who nobody thought would buy into it, was one of the people who testified yesterday about how he got to the point of being able to support the bill. And that still has to happen. They still have to get those votes in the House.
Let's move on to the city of Detroit here, where there's quite a bit going on. Federal Judge Stephen Rhodes is presiding over the Detroit bankruptcy proceedings. Yesterday, he set an August 19th deadline for anyone to challenge the city's bankruptcy filing. Now, earlier this month, he stayed and halted all lawsuits involving the city's bankruptcy declaration. Can you put this in perspective for us?
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, the key with this all is I don't think this judge was too far off of the emergency manager's timeline. I think he's a little slower than maybe the state would like. You know, but it just shows that, you know, bankruptcy is you know, very drawn out process. I think there's a lot of questions as to whether the governor and Kevin Orr's timeline is realistic, you know, if they can really get out of bankruptcy within a year.
Kathy, there are some deadlines mentioned in your newspaper, in the Detroit Free Press this morning. And I have to say, we were talking about this before we came to air. We're a little surprised at how drawn out of a process this is. We got an October 23rd date to put the trial on the question of eligibility is not scheduled to begin until October 23rd.
Well, think about it. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of creditors out there who the city of Detroit owes money to. And all those people have to put their objections in. All those people have to make their case for whether the city should be eligible to go bankrupt or not. So it is going to take some time to wade through all that paperwork.
But the Snyder administration is very happy that this is under the hands of one judge and not every judge in Ingham County, which has been the storyline for the last month. Every time the governor turns around, somebody's suing him. Every time he turns around, Judge Aquilina says, yeah, they're right, Governor, you're a bad guy. Now this is bankruptcy. You've got to say, you know, look at this is my puppy. I'm going to take it. Courts,
sure,
take the summer off. Okay, we'll take care of this. And it's easier for our coverage, certainly, to be focused on one thing. But there is a constitutional issue here, which is central to this debate, which is the pensions for the 20,000 folks in Detroit who are firefighters and police officers. They are getting up in the middle of the night wondering, after this is all over, do I have anything? And that is a huge question.
Well, the pensions of Detroit City workers are protected by the state constitution, but bankruptcy can change anything? What if anything, have we learned? Have we gotten even a glimmer of an idea as to the future of those pensions?
The judge has said, I will rule on that issue of the constitutionality protection, and so that is in play. And Bill Schuette, being the astute person that he is, got into the act this week, to nobody's surprise.
What?
When you guys read that on Saturday morning, what did you think? Holy cow, this is Bill Schuette being Bill Schuette.
Yeah.
But it's a good move on his
defending
part.
Defending the state constitution and the right of
as the people's attorney.
This comes after when Judge Aquilina ruled that the bankruptcy violated the state constitution. Schuette was at the Court of Appeals within minutes trying to get that stopped. So it seems like he's taking two different stands.
Which he is.
This. Yeah.
And really, people asked over the weekend, well, how can he be on both sides of the issue? There is a long precedent in the state of the Attorney General arguing, particularly before the Public Service Commission, both sides of an issue. And I talked to Schuette over the weekend. He said this is nothing unusual, but he really got in with both feet on behalf of the petitioners. And there was speculation that he did an end run or kind of stabbed the governor in the back. That's not true. The governor's office was well aware that this stuff was coming, and he announced in a press release on Saturday that he was in the game. What does it mean? We don't know. It doesn't mean the pensions will be protected, but it's like your mother's chicken soup. It's always nice to have the Attorney General on your side, just in case.
Quite a position to take. It really is.
Well, it wasn't that courageous of a position. It's in the Constitution. And his line was, I'm just defending the Constitution. You know, I'm just a country lawyer from Midland. You know, put me in, coach. I can do this.
But it's a federal-state dynamic that's playing out here.
Well, and the Snyder and Orr have said that pensions will be protected for the next 6 months. And after that, who knows what's going to happen. That there will definitely be adjustments made is the term that they've used, which means that there's going to be some cuts in the pensions.
But in the end, whether the pensions stay or whether the pensions go is ultimately the call of Judge Rhodes.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. What do we know about this man from his track record? Are we able to read anything into the tea leaves?
Yeah, he wanted to retire.
Good luck with that.
Apparently those plans are on hold.
And he's in a rock and roll band, or he has been.
The rock and roll judge.
Did he play bass?
I think so.
Mike Huckabee already plays the bass.
Yes, we already have one of those.
That's right.
Maybe he's the lead singer.
And curiously, I've got to get back to this. It has not been determined, legally at least, that the city is insolvent. How is that?
Well, the state, Mr. Orr has to make the case. Everybody said, oh, the city of Detroit is in bankruptcy. No, it's not. It has filed for bankruptcy. There's a distinction there with a difference. It's up to Mr. Orr to make the case, and this is where the creditors will come in and say, look, there are plenty of other avenues that you could have gone to stay out of bankruptcy court, Mr. Orr and Mr. Judge. Please order Mr. Orr to bargain in good faith. Go back to the table. We don't need to go into bankruptcy. So this is a jump ball, and we don't know the outcome. We know what the governor wants and Mr. Orr what they want, but they may not get it.
And in the meantime, a whole lot of creditors and their attorneys are watching on the sidelines very closely. According to a recent poll, Governor Rick Snyder's approval rating has gone up recently. Harper poll, I believe. What's your best guess as to why?
Well, I think that people have seen him go into this bankruptcy thing and looked at it as a good leadership move, that Detroit has been floundering for years and years and years, and finally somebody came in and did something about it. I think that definitely has something. The Medicaid, I'm not so sure. I think that there's certainly widespread support out there, but there's also some really passionate disapproval of it.
Don't you think it also underscores the short-term memory of the electorate?
Well,
we all remember what happened last December, okay?
Are people beginning to forget right to work? Dave Eggert, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think as you get farther and farther away from the turmoil and everything that was going on at the Capitol, it's been 7 or 8 months now that people will start to forget, although, you know, it's the job of Democrats to remind people in the next, 15 months before his reelection is to, here's what happened, don't forget.
I think people see when somebody makes a tough decision, and putting Detroit into bankruptcy, certainly he was not going to win Detroit anyway in the election. Yeah. But he did not frame this decision in terms of his own personal politics, which is vintage Rick Snyder. He does what he thinks is right. And I think people in outstate Michigan in particular, this poll was not of Detroiters. Okay, he would not have had 53% support in Detroit to do this.
Yeah.
But people in outstate say, you know, kind of a gutsy move. And he did what other governors have refused to do. They all nibbled around the edges of this problem and probably made it worse, didn't solve it. So he comes in and says, all right, I'm going to do this. And I think people give him style points for that.
Road funding has, at least for now, moved to the back burner. But when the legislature returns, it will be back. What do you consider the main contours here of a road funding deal with a future? Kathleen?
Well, Governor Snyder has talked about fee increases and gas tax increases, and I just don't think that they're going to be able to get that through the legislature. So, I mean, if they pass the Medicaid expansion, that brings a lot of federal money into the state, which is going to free up some money to do some other things, maybe some road improvements.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Roger Kahn has talked about that when he introduced his revamped version of the Medicaid expansion. It's like, you know, my first thing is going to be roads, and I think that's the first thing that they're going to be looking at.
Yeah, I mean, I think if assuming they get this deal on Medicaid expansion, that may help. Bring Democrats to the table. You know, I think there's been a lot of question as to whether the Republicans can stand up to the Tea Party and pass controversial things like this. But I agree with Kathleen. I mean, I think the gas tax and the fee increases are not going to happen. It's all whether or not they can come to some grand deal with a sales tax increase, and maybe Democrats will get some education funding increase, you know, take something to the voters, let them weigh in on it. And so far, there hasn't been much progress in that kind of idea.
The governor and Mr. Richardville met on this earlier this week, and one of the storylines out of the House from the speaker is he will go to the Democrats. He's not too happy that the Democrats haven't brought anything to the table to negotiate on this, and basically at some point will deliver the ultimatum. I will find 56 votes, and Democrats, if you don't help me, we're also going to put prevailing wage in that package, which will get the Democrats' attention. So this has been below the radar. Medicaid and Detroit bankruptcy have sucked all the air out of the town, but that's behind the scene there. The governor's not given up. Getting new revenue will be tough. The Tea Party doesn't like this at all, and they do have some sway in the House. So it'll be an interesting fall when we get all the folks back in town as to what they do on this.
And remind our listeners what the prevailing wage measure would likely call for.
It basically says that labor has to be paid a certain level, and if you repeal that, then it's just the free market at work, and labor obviously doesn't like that at all.
Okay. We also learned earlier this month that the Canadian energy company Encana is hoping to drill up to 500 new natural gas wells in northern Michigan using hydraulic fracturing. We spoke with James Clift of the Michigan Environmental Council at some length about this yesterday here on Current State. Now, Democrats introduced measures this month tightening up regulation of fracking. Is this a party line discussion doomed to failure, or does this have any legs, Kathleen?
I think it's more of a party line discussion. You might peel off a few Republican environmentalists, but that's kind of an oxymoron. So I think it's going to be a party line vote.
Simultaneously, you have a petition drive out there to ban it altogether, which I think they'll probably come up with the signatures and put that on the ballot. But it's interesting, the environmental community is not totally on board with that. You have a lot of Greens that have said we ought to work on the regulation piece and not the banning piece, because fracking is here to stay. So let's just put as many safeguards into it as we can.
It's going to get a lot of attention if it becomes a ballot proposal, though, won't it?
Well, of course it will.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it will. There's no question about that.
The upshot of yesterday's segment here on Current State with James Clift and the Environmental Council was that hundreds of new natural gas rigs will use a lot of increasingly uncommon water. There's no future there for any across the aisle support from Republicans on this. That is such a visible thing when you you go up north and you see the Great Lakes going down.
Well, I mean, The governor, I think, he's got like a task force or something right now. And I think the University of Michigan is supposed to come out with a study. So I think he's not close the door to looking at the issue, but I think it may be up to him to kind of drive the discussion as to whether there are some tweaks they can make to the state environmental regulations. My understanding is Michigan's not necessarily totally Wild West like some of the other states with no regulations.
Right.
You know, you talk to proponents of it, and they'll say some of this stuff's been going on for 60 years, but on the other hand, I think this is the deep well drilling that it hasn't been real prevalent in Michigan, and that's
the
issue.
Yeah, this is miles of drilling.
Right.
Most underreported story for the month of July, Kathleen?
Anything that didn't have something to do with the Detroit bankruptcy.
Seriously, you want to go? You want to go any deeper with me on that? Was there?
No, seriously.
We don't. You make a good point.
We didn't have the space to put a whole lot of other stuff out there.
Yeah.
So it just kind of sucked. Like Tim said, kind of sucked all the air out of the room.
Let me rephrase. What do you anticipate for August?
It's
not going to change much in August.
With the legislature gone for most of the month of August, the Medicaid expansion is going to bubble up again at the end of the month. That's when the Senate is supposed to vote on the Medicaid expansion. But it's summertime in Lansing.
Yeah.
They're putting new carpeting in the building. I can hardly wait to get over there and see what they've done. Our tax dollars are at work.
Well, most underreported for July, Tim?
I got nothing. I think everything just been so focused on this other stuff that nothing really has bubbled up. The governor's been out doing his town hall meetings. I think it was underreported that it basically had no impact on the process at all. I think this was a classic case of the governor is the energizing bunny, and he always needs to be doing something. So he traveled all over the state, and the polling numbers on Medicaid did not move an inch. In fact, the people that were for before the town halls, same number as after. But I think he probably felt good that he was doing something. But again, I want to get at this relationship problem that he has with Senate Republicans, which is not as bad as it was. But I'll tell you what, when you put billboards in a senator's district, that is heavy-duty stuff. And if the governor thought that putting a billboard would get him a yes vote, I think he needs to rethink that strategy because of the thinking of senators. You know what? If I don't like this bill, he puts a billboard in and I vote yes, the next time we have a disagreement, guess what will happen? There'll be another billboard.
Yeah.
And so these guys are not idiots. They figured this out. And so I think he overplayed his hand, but this is the governor. He's very competitive. He's tenacious. He always wants to be doing something, even if it's wrong. But I think the energy that he put into traveling all around the state, he could have saved the gas mileage and gone up to the island and had fun with the kids.
Dave Eggert, quickly, most underreported story.
One thing I think was overlooked a bit earlier in the month was the governor signing indigent defense reforms. It's kind of interesting that a Republican legislator and Republican governor came to a deal on that to improve the state's defense system for poor defendants. And it's kind of interesting to see where that goes from here if the state actually gives counties money to improve it.
David Eggert reports on the Capitol for the Associated Press. Kathleen Gray is with the Detroit Free Press. Tim Skubick is the host of Off the Record on WKAR-TV. It's been our month in review segment. Thanks, fellas.
Thanks.
Thank you.